Support for Talking Art comes from Quad City Bank & Trust, providing consumer and commercial banking as well as trust and asset management. For more information, visit qcbt.bank or stop by one of QCBT's 5 locations.
This is Carolyn Martin, and we'll be talking art today about several exhibitions at the Muscatine Arts Center and about the personal friendships between the artists, a creative circle of friends in and around Muscatine, Iowa, who regularly gathered to discuss their art. And here with me today is Corey Christensen, an artist whose exhibition of mixed media works, The History of the Future, is currently on view. Welcome, Corey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Melanie Alexander, director of the Muscatine Arts Center. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Of course, it's so good to have you here. And Corey, let's begin with you. Your show opened in August and will be up through March 10th. While some of the works are experiments in texture and in color, others examine a particular historical moment or event. Can you talk about one of those?
Yeah, I think a lot of things kind of come from different readings that I do or items that I come across. One piece in particular is called Tether, and it relates to a small piece of work that I got that was done by it's called the Carlisle Indian School, and it's out in Pennsylvania. And I saw this, and it was incredibly well done, handwriting, and it was a quote by Abraham Lincoln. And so I didn't really know much about it. And so I researched it and was kind of shocked, one, that I didn't know about it, and two, just kind of the history of it. And basically, this was a school in the late 1800s, early 1900s, where they were taking Native American, usually teenagers, and trying to Americanize them, essentially. And so kind of stripping them of their culture and kind of, trying to teach them how to, interact with society, I guess. And so at the same time that I was kind of reading this, I was taking calligraphy lessons. And so the piece actually has my calligraphy practice items kind of as the background of the collage. But then there's this turkey feather, which is a native bird to the United States here. And this feather is kind of strung down to the canvas, basically. And at the bottom, it says Carlisle. And it's just a reference to that. One for me learning, but also for people who are aware of that, just as a reminder of this event in our history.
So. Mm-hmm. So some of them have specific stories. Others are different. There are 5 pieces, I believe, on a wall hanging together that have very luminous surfaces. They're glistening. One is almost 3-dimensional. They have a very tactile feel. And what were you thinking about when you created those, or what were you trying to express?
Yeah, I mean, they're very much experimental, I would say, trying to see how, one, I can produce texture on a canvas, but then also how I can use color to interact and to draw in the viewer. And so a lot of them kind of started with a texture, and then I built upon them with multiple layers of paint. And so a lot of times, my work will just stem from a new technique or something that I read about, and that's kind of how these started. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I was struck by that your technique varies quite a bit, walking from piece to piece. I love some of your collages too. There is one called Speed Freak, another one, The Time Is Ripe, and you've torn some sheet music, strips of newspaper. You've incorporated painted paper to create images that are just really inviting, and you can kind of get lost in them, searching for the meaning.
Yeah, they're incredibly fun to create as well. Most of the ones there are created from 1970s Rolling Stone magazines, actually, which are incredibly entertaining. And so it was so fun to look through these magazines, read the articles, see what the issues were back then, and then incorporate that into the collage. There's also a lot of classified stuff from classifieds, you know, when they used to be in magazines. And so a lot of those are entertaining. So the one is called Speed Freak. The words are actually just from a piece that I tore out that was on there. So it's actually in the collage. It says Speed Freak. Same thing with The Time is Ripe. So there are great titles, but I guess I can't take credit for coming up with them. But yeah, they're fun to make. And exactly like you said, the goal is that you'll look at them and you'll be like, there's something more here, and it'll kind of draw you in. And that's what I enjoy making them and enjoy hearing people enjoy them. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you blend the past and the future so well. So you're, the title is apt, the history of the future. But these pieces, it looked like were all created over a 3-year time period from 2020 until this year. And they're on the second floor gallery of the Muscatine Arts Center. It's this historic home. So you're also kind of somewhat walking back into the past to view them. So I love that. And you have had a very circuitous career. You are an artist. You are currently obtaining a BFA, but you've also trained, and you worked until quite recently as an orthopedic surgeon in the Iowa City area. Can you talk a little bit about that very significant career change?
Well, yeah, I guess I've always had an interest in art, since I was a young kid. I took classes in photography and ceramics in high school. But then, I kind of got on this path of medicine, and it's, it envelops everything. For 10 years I lived and breathed medicine and orthopedics and very little else. And so when I got done with my residency and started working, I had a little more time and started kind of dabbling in art again. And it kind of grew and grew and grew over time. And I also started a website where I would interview artists and then write about them. And so I got to know a lot of different artists this way, including John Fasanelli Kowalty. And that really kind of opened my eyes to this possibility of being an artist. When I grew up, I didn't have a lot of exposure to artists. I didn't know any artists who were professional artists. And I had a sister who went to college and kind of studied art, but never really, I never became an artist. And so it was just always this thing to me that was kind of something I enjoyed, but I never saw it as a career. And so, as I was working, I had this kind of creative impulse, but I had very little time. As that impulse grew, I was like, I need to do something to make this happen. And so kind of snowballed from there until I decided I was going to make a career change and go back to school and start new.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've made this really interesting distinction between medicine and art. And while there is an art to medicine, you've pointed out that medicine was somewhat confining in that there is no room for error at all. And this was a phrase you used, it's I think on your website, the unyielding responsibilities of your vocation. And in contrast to art, where you're encouraged to experiment, and sometimes failures result in good things because it can take you to a completely different direction. What you think at first might be an artistic failure is actually, opening up your eyes and perhaps letting you embark on a whole new technique. So creativity, experimentation, fortuitous accidents are all an important part of being an artist.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think some of the best works that I've ever done started off in a failure, meaning, I started a painting and I was like, kind of to my wit's end with it, and I kind of went a completely different direction. And then a lot of times they work out better. And again, I think it's that letting go of having this really clearly defined plan. You know, I think, you know, you're right. I mean, art is very much about experimentation and spontaneity. And again, surgery is not.
No, it's not at all. You've also, besides this exhibition that's up now, you've had a solo exhibition 3 years ago at the Hudson River Gallery, and that's now in Coralville, Iowa. People might remember it had been in Iowa City above the mansion, which was this old, beautiful building that housed an interior design shop. So you've been creating really excellent work for a while now. And Melanie, I want to bring you into the conversation. So several of the exhibitions that you have now that are currently up at the Muscatine Arts Center are by artists who are connected to each other. And I should have said, well, Corey now is working in North Liberty, Iowa. Corey's from Muscatine originally. And opening up soon on September 21st is the exhibition Fasanelli Kowalti, The Man Filled with Music. What can you tell us about the artist John Fasanelli Kowalti?
Oh, so John was a longtime resident of Muscatine, and he was born in Iowa City and then had spent some time on his grandparents' dairy farm and attended college first in Wisconsin. He was raised, you know, most of his childhood growing up in the Hyde Park area of Chicago. You know, he was just an amazing guy. So he did first study history. I think John is a real Renaissance man. He could dive pretty deep on all sorts of topics and was just fascinating. So he spent a lot of time in his, you know, childhood in Chicago, going to the museums there. He talks about, you know, just being sort of dropped off by his mom and said, okay, here, you just spend some time drawing in this gallery. And so just think about the childhood he had. It was pretty fascinating. So, you know, he studied history, and then eventually he ends up back at in Iowa at the University of Iowa, and he studied with some phenomenal printmakers, Mauricio Lisansky, who at, you know, hit that time, Lisansky was really the best known printmaker in the United States. So, you know, John walks into this world with these, you know, just stellar printmakers, and becomes really fascinated with this technology that was developed in the 1400s called intaglio printing. And he also studied under Virginia Meyer. And so John went on to get his BFA and MFA from the University of Iowa. And then he worked as Mauricio Lisansky's assistant and printer for about 14 years in the 1980s and 1990s. So, you know, he had this just amazing, you know, immersion into the world of printmaking and working alongside this very just renowned printmaker. You know, I mean, the conversations that we would have, John would, oh my goodness, go in so many different directions, you know, whether it was history or literature, opera, music, you know, and of course, art and, you know, the technology and printing, bookmaking. I mean, you just never knew with John, like, where your conversation was going to go, but it was just fascinating.
Well, and he was such a musician. And I should say, we are talking sadly in the past tense because he died several years ago, young, from a degenerative neuromuscular condition similar to ALS. But But he was also a musician, and so this exhibition is mainly his music-themed prints. Is that correct?
That's right. We're spotlighting the. I think everything in the show is a print, and you know later on he was doing drawings. Of course, he had drawings earlier too, but this is really spotlighting his prints that are music related. And John, here in the Muscatine community, was known for, playing in the Muscatine Symphony Orchestra and the Mad Creek Mudcats. And then he was also involved with a few other musical groups. So, he had that love of music. Over the years, the Art Center has worked, had worked with John. We did a retrospective of his work back in 2013 that really, spanned his entire career. So even some of his very early work and a lot of what you would see there, I mean, he had some music-related pieces. He would also, cover people and that were in his life, whether that was, like his grandfather or his wife and daughters, and just things that he loved, being out in nature, hiking, ice hockey. I am probably forgetting all sorts of things that that he was involved with, but he really took everything that was, sort of important to him and put that into his prints. Mm-hmm. And
it sounds like he also cultivated, he sounds like he did so much. And beyond that, he cultivated a group of artists in the Muscatine area who got together to make art.
That's right. Yeah.
What do you know about that?
I wish I had a real history of how it started and who was involved, but there were quite a few, and I think they were all men who would get together and, they would create things, together, not necessarily as a collaborative work of art, but they were, and they would look at what the various members of this sort of loosely formed group, what they were doing and sort of talk about it. But, like any conversation that involved John, it would, go all over the place, this sort of meandering path of, And I think Corey over the years has gotten to know quite a few of the people who were part of that. And so right now we have, once John Fasanelli Kowalty's exhibition is up and the Mauricio Lisansky exhibition is up, which those open on September 21st. But you'll also be able to see Corey Christensen's work. And then a fourth person is John Deason. And John was part of that Men Who Make Art group. And there were several other members here in the Muscatine area, and I think they just sort of pushed each other to continue to experiment, and the way that I don't these this kind of group of relationships grew out of it, and the connections, these days, if any one of these guys comes in, and they're all coming in to see Corey's show and John Deason's show, and there's such fondness for one another and for, respect for one another's work. So it was really, I think, a special thing in this community that, all these men were able to come together and, just support each other as creative makers. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's just so unusual, to have that situation. John Deason, like you mentioned, the photographer, his work is up on the second floor adjacent to Corey's exhibition. And I noticed John Deason credited a man named Grant Grant Jensen as mm-hmm. someone growing up who would change his life. So one has influenced the other, and it just kind of endlessly cycles. And Corey, it sounds like you were perhaps the youngest member of this group. And it sounds like your relationship with John Fasanelli Kowalti began as a kind of almost a mentor and student, but it grew into something so much deeper than that and was very transformational. So how can you tell us the story about how you met?
Yeah, so I have a family friend who was part of that group. His name is Dan Rohde. And so as I was kind of branching out and starting this website, I spoke with Dan and he said, well, I've got the perfect guy that you need to meet, John Fasanelli Kowalti. And so that's what started it. And so I went over and I met John and again, I was just immediately just so just amazed by him, just what, you know, his stories, his knowledge of history and his work. I mean, just the breadth of his work, the amount of his work, and the fact that, you know, he just keeps going, you know, and you know, he was the most just energetic and happiest person. You know, whenever you met him, he's just in such a good mood, and that really rubbed off on me as well. And so I met John and we kind of talked about doing this article. And so I interviewed him and took some pictures of his work. And then he mentioned that he had some other works that he would like photographed. And so I actually ended up photographing more of his work. And in exchange, I kind of got some lessons in intaglio. And so it was, I got to work with the master and he really showed me, you know, everything from the basics that he learned from Virginia Myers, which, you know, how to hold the burin, how to sharpen the tools so you don't injure yourself. But then he gave me this big sheet of copper. I had no idea how much copper cost at the time, but he gives me this giant sheet and he's just like, see what you can do with this. And it was probably a $50 or $60 sheet of copper. And he just gives it to me and I took it home and I didn't have any of the tools. So I'm just scraping it with nails and whatever and making this design. And I actually hammered on it. I'm like, oh, I'll just hammer on it. This will be cool. And so I ended up making a foot, which if you look at John's work, he has a lot of foot motifs because he was no longer walking and he loved to hike. And so that was kind of his way of dealing with that. And so I made this big foot and I remember I took the plate down and John just looks at it and he's like, you killed the plate. And I'm like, what did I do? And he's like, no, he's like, this is perfect. He's like, this is so perfect. He's like, you're going to love it. And so he showed me how to ink it up and how to print it. And we went out to his press and we printed it. And it was really a transformative experience for me. And then I would visit with him usually every couple of weeks or so. And sometimes we'd do a lesson. Sometimes we just talk. And it was a great relationship.
Oh, it sounded like it. And I thought this was so interesting that here you were working as an orthopedic surgeon and you would go visit him every couple of weeks because you actually had a medical clinic in Muscatine every 2 weeks. So that would be the reason for you to go back to Muscatine where you were from and then to spend time with him. And his printing press was in a small building behind his house.
Yeah, in like an 1800s carriage house in the back of his house. Yeah.
So it's an interesting part of the story that you were in exchange. Like he was teaching you this ancient method of intaglio printmaking. And in turn, you were photographing his prints and in essence, helping him to catalog them because he had so much work in his home.
Yeah.
And, you know, sadly, he was confined to a wheelchair, so it would have been hard for him to continue that printmaking. But he continued, you know, drawing and creating work in other ways for so much longer. And now that John's gone, you actually have his printing press.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was something we talked about before he passed away. And... you know, talked about just, trying to continue the work that he was doing. You know, he was very, very interested in seeing intaglio printmaking continued, because it is really an ancient art, and it is not necessarily taught in printmaking classes, because there's a lot of newer techniques that are much less, let's just say, less labor intensive. It is a very difficult process. I mean, if you look at John's work, and if you understand, you know, what it takes to make a mark in a copper plate, and then you look at the marks that John made, it is an entirely different understanding of his work, and you're kind of blown away by it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the scale and the number of prints that he made, and just the complexity of the images, they're all cut with a burin, cut with a little plow of metal through that copper over and over and over again. And if he makes a mistake, he takes a scraper and scrapes away the line over and over and over again. And it's just it's an amazing process. And for me, I learned how to do it. I'm trying to find the time to do it. So that's, you know, kind of where I'm at. I'm getting into this where hopefully I'll have the time to continue that tradition. I have the press. I've used the press. I know how to do it. I even taught a class on intaglio at Public Space One with the knowledge that John had given me.
So. Right. And I think John would have so loved that. The class you taught, you called it a mentor's gift. And can you describe briefly what you did there and how you got the public involved?
Yeah. And so basically it was kind of, it was a reflection of what John had given to me. And so he gave me this experience that I had never had. And so, and I think printmaking is very intimidating because you have these sharp tools and you have these copper plates and you have these presses that, you know, can crush you. You know, they're so heavy. That press I have weighs a ton. And so literally a ton. And so it's intimidating. So I wanted to take away that intimidation. And so I put copper plates all along the floor of this gallery and then had prompts that were easy, you know, like put on this pair of shoes with scrapers on the bottom and walk on a plate, or drop a rock on the plate. And I just wanted people to see what sort of marks could, or what sort of images these marks could make. And then we had two printing days where we took those plates and printed them, and the people inked them and ran them through the press and got to see how easy it is, but also how beautiful it can be, and simple, how, you know, just a simple line can be extremely expressive. And so that, you know, that was always John's thing. He worked with lines. That was his way of expressing himself. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and I'm so thankful that he shared his passion with you and that you were able to share it with others. And, you know, you never know the impact that you may have had on people attending that public event. So, Melanie, the last time I saw a collection of John's work was in 2019. And at that point, he had a show called Atlas that was a solo exhibition up at the Muscatine Art Center. And the exhibition now is quite different. How would you describe the difference between the 2019 show and what's opening September 21st?
Right. Now, of course, in 2019, John was an active part of selecting the pieces and giving us guidance on, you know, what was to be included. And that show did include prints that John had made. But we also really spotlighted sort of the pivot he made, you know, as his degenerative disease kind of, you know, took a stronger hold. The printmaking process is so physical. And, you know, he had to sort of grapple with how to, you know, continue producing, because he, I think, had thoughts and ideas that he wanted to get out on paper, and, you know, yet his body had these physical limitations. So it was, you know, it really inspiring to see how he made that pivot. And he was such a, you know, an optimist, and so positive, even when he was in the midst of really, you know, these physical struggles. So he took those giant sheets of paper that, he had had for, I think they had belonged to Mauricio Lozansky, and just got out the crayons and the markers and color pencils and paint. And, you know, he was doing these drawings that would look in a lot of ways like topographical maps, and, experimenting with line and repeating patterns and, you know, how he would apply color. For a while, he also took, prints that he had made and had cut them into strips and would weave them together. So there was a lot of sort of thinking about, you know, coming apart and then sort of putting things back together. Mm-hmm. That was really fascinating. And, the Art Center, we worked with John to sort of pick pieces that he had made in those that period between 2013 and 2019, and highlighting just how active he was. I mean, he stayed productive for pretty much basically up to the very end. It was just awe-inspiring. And John was, of course, there at the reception, and the title of the show was called Atlas, and it was really a tribute to his wife, who, you know, she was managing so much and taking care of him and supporting him all throughout. That was a really, really special show. And it was fantastic to have all these people who had, you know, that John had touched in some way in the same room. And, how happy everybody was. And, you know, John, even, you know, over the winter, he had his wheelchair, and he would make the trek in his wheelchair and come into the galleries because he wanted to be with the staff and he wanted to meet up with people. And it was really, I think about it as being a very happy, positive type of experience. And with this exhibition, we did have a smaller show shortly after John had passed away. And we included his works in the galleries up in the historic house, and had always had the intention of coming back and doing a larger show of his work. And so it's been a process to work with his wife, Diane, to identify. And actually, I mean, we started with, you know, what could this be? Cause it could be anything. So getting it narrowed down to these, the theme of music, when there were so many choices. I mean, my goodness, the guy was just prolific. So, it's been an honor, to work with Diane on this exhibition. And I know she's been in touch with multiple, people in her circle, about letting us borrow some of those prints to have on view for the exhibition. We're looking forward to the reception, later in September, and seeing, you know, a lot of John's circle come back. And of course, this, you know, the whole group of men who were making art here in Muscatine. And there's just so many people who knew John, mm-hmm. from all different sort of situations. He was also an instructor here at Muscatine Community College, and people would see him perform with the symphony orchestra or the Mudcats. So I think it's just going to be a great time.
I think so too. And the Mudcats, the group that he performed with, will be at the reception, which really brings it full circle. And I hope John Deason will be able to tend to the photographer. His work, I really enjoyed. It's beautiful. And he has his own unique way of seeing the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so John Deason, his work is up through October 29th. So he's another who has a large circle of acquaintances in the Muscatine area, but it's very much worth checking out his photography. And I'm sure John Deason will also be at the reception. And I don't know, Corey, I don't think I've point blank asked you before, but will you be at the reception?
Planning on it.
Okay.
Well, I'm planning on it too, because I want to meet all these people. And, you know, Muscatine has really been so fortunate and uniquely situated to have so many talented artists. Corey Christensen and Melanie Alexander, I so enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
The History of the Future, a collection of mixed media works by artist Corey Christensen, are on display through March 10th at the Muscatine Arts Center. And opening on September 21st is the exhibition entitled John Fasanelli Cobalti, The Man Filled with Music. Corey and John were friends and mentors, part of a larger circle of interconnected artists in the Muscatine area, which included the photographer John Deason and others. The opening reception for Fasanelli Cobalti's show will be Sunday, September 24th from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Live music will be performed, and it's free of charge. For more information, visit muscatineartcenter.org. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.